Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by Equine Muscle Massage Therapy by Jan Barson, and you can reach her at 631-862-1402. Tonight's guest is Dr. Erlinder Haraldson, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008, or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio on AIM. And good evening to you, Bob.
And hello, Fran. And as you mentioned, I'm real excited about our guest tonight. We'll be introducing him shortly. He might know more about the afterlife and the study of afterlife communication than anybody on the face of the planet. He's been doing it for his entire life. So that's going to be interesting. Kind of a personal sad day for us as our longtime companion Cat Olive passed today, and which got us to revisiting a discussion about pets in the afterlife. And I know that you certainly believe that she's in the afterlife now, and I do as well. It got me thinking, though. You know how we always talk about when people pass and they migrate to people of like mind, so to say, people in the same state of consciousness or
enlightenment
or spirit development and
soul state.
Yeah, well, I wonder what happens, you know, with pets. I mean, there are certainly so many reports that people have of encountering animals, you know, in that have passed, and also in channel reports of people that are already in the afterlife that are greeted, you know, by their pets. So,
right, and very often when you witness medium readings, particularly in groups, you'll have the medium bringing forth an animal that was there to greet somebody who passed afterwards.
Right. So animals. You know, let's say like the cats and dogs we're talking about now, they're not automatically migrating to other cats and dogs. You know, they're migrating, if we believe these reports of meeting up with people, that they're migrating to something more than that. They're migrating to maybe a resonance or a bond of people that, you know, that consciousness is consciousness, or is there a separate pet consciousness?
No, I don't think there's a separate pet consciousness per se, but I think we're interpreting the other side and the way it might exist in relationship to us the wrong way. So, and again, I'm going back to my favorite book, Testimony of Light. Required reading is what I say. It's a great, great, great book, but it doesn't, I don't believe, and I'll have to go back and read it again, that it talks about animals in the afterlife. However, when you ask the question of, so where are they, it's the same issue with people. We know that we know, or what we've learned, or we believe we've learned, is that depending on our soul's enlightenment, we are with like kinds of enlightened people when we cross over. So there is this scale of people who are in the shadows and people who are in the very, very bright light. But when a medium is doing a reading in a group, they all seem to come onto that one level, that one vibration, where the medium can receive them all, regardless of what their state of enlightenment is. So if you take that into consideration, and the medium is bringing through an animal, at the same reading where she's bringing through all these other people, good, you know, people who had wonderful lives here, people who had not so wonderful lives here, people who were old souls, new souls, then you have to say there has to be a vibrational place where they can all, quote-unquote, gather to be able to communicate. So when the dog or the cat or the bird or whatever it was is there to receive the owner, when the owner crosses over, they're coming, let's say, to the gateway to receive you. We don't know where they are in the spectrum of enlightenment.
Right. Well, when I look at it from a broader perspective, I mean, we know that cats and dogs are telepathic.
Oh, absolutely.
So, and if we believe that telepathy is a key to afterlife communication, that discarnates, you know, communicate telepathically with those, you know, in the physical, then it would make even more sense that a cat and a dog would be able to communicate as well. I mean, look at the research. I mean, a lot of people are familiar with the research of Rupert Sheldrake, you know, where dogs can anticipate, you know, when their owner is heading for home and assume a position waiting, regardless of what time it is, even when you vary up the time, and how far away they were. But once they make that decision to head for home, the dogs recognize that. So there is, and plus we know that they can, even in their physical senses, they could see and hear a broader stretch spectrum of light and of sound than we can as humans. So I'm totally open to the fact that they should be able to communicate with us telepathically. Now, you don't hear much about that. People don't have dreams.
There's not a lot of research on it. People do have dreams where their pets have come to them in the dreams. So they are visiting. They are having visiting, but there's not a lot of scientific research out there using animals in the afterlife, and maybe we need some of that. Mm-hmm. But I know from having animals all my life and even observing from the last few years of having animals that before the animal is getting ready to cross, before we even know that the animal is ill, the other animals in the house seem to be drawn to that animal. I mean, we watched Popeye, who was Olive's brother, bathe her, you know, regularly, weeks before she passed.
Right. And what was that? Was it yesterday, or the day before, where Olive's brother, as you mentioned, Popeye, was just, you know, licking her and getting her ready for an extended period of time, which he's never done in 13 years.
Right,
you know?
And if you recall, when our other cat, Spot, crossed, Popeye also bathed him. And Popeye was much younger than him. You know, you would say, oh, well, that's his sibling, and so they have an attachment. They're drawn to each other. But Spot, who was much older than him, we adopted way, way, way before he was even born, and yet Popeye gave him this same ceremonial bath.
Yeah, I wonder if that's, you know, just instinct, or whether that is some sort of, you know, telepathic communication, you know, or some sort of, I guess you call it soul knowledge.
Or both.
Yeah.
You know, we know that, and I think a majority of people who have had cats in particular, particularly outdoor cats, know that when the cats get older, they will just disappear if they're outdoor cats.
Right.
And they go back, just like some religious sects believe, go out into the forest or the woods or the desert, and they lay down, they meditate, and they cross over. And I think that that's kind of like what the animals instinctively have learned to do. They just become prey for the greater good.
Well, we're going to go to our break, and when we come back, we are going to have a fascinating interview with Dr. Harrelson. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a few.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org. to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.winbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is ATRANSC.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Ellender Haraldson. Our sponsor is Equine Muscle Massage Therapy by Jan Barson, and she could be reached via phone at 631-862-1402. Bob?
And we are truly honored to have tonight's guest. Dr. Haraldson is a world-respected researcher and professor emeritus of psychology at the Faculty of Social Science at the University of Iceland. And Dr. Haraldson continues to be an active academic. He's published work in various parapsychology journals. He's worked with Ian Stevenson and Carlos Osis on reincarnation research, as well as doing work in Iceland. Dr. Haraldson has worked in the United States and at the University of Freiburg in Germany. And when he was in the U.S., as a matter of fact, he worked with J.B. Ryan, who many people are familiar with. Dr. Haraldson has written several books, including Modern Miracles at the Hour of Death. And his new book is Departed Among the Living, an Investigative Study of Afterlife Encounters. Welcome, Dr. Haraldson.
Thank you. Nice to hear you.
No, one thing that I want to ask you right off the bat, because as I mentioned, we are so fortunate to have you with us. After decades of research, and perhaps you've done more research than in this area than anybody on the face of the planet. When we consider some of the areas of study, such as deathbed visions and reincarnation and mediumship and near-death experiences, what do you think offers the most evidence that suggests survival?
Well, I think that suggests the evidence from several kinds of phenomena. You mentioned deathbed visions. Well, we have also apparitions of the dead or encounters with the dead. Then, of course, we have now more recently studies of near-death experiences, which have been very prominent and aroused a lot of attention. Then we also have, since the sort of latter part of last century, a lot of work done by Professor Stevenson at the University of Virginia on cases of children who claim to remember a past life and whose memories have sometimes been verified. So I think the evidence comes from various sources.
Yeah, and one thing that did surprise me in your investigative study, we know that these encounters, these afterlife encounters, take many different forms. But I was surprised to learn from your research that 67% of all the reported encounters with the deceased involved visual experiences. I was surprised that the percentage was that high. Did you find that surprising when you compiled the data? Mm-hmm.
Well, when I did this, I was not too well prepared for it. That is, I hadn't studied other investigations very thoroughly. Well, yes and no, but there's one thing perhaps that I should say, that we had decided in the beginning only to include in our case collection cases of perceptions of the deceased that were perceptive, namely either seeing or hearing or feeling touch or being touched and so on. And so we, to begin with, we excluded a strong sense of presence. But after we had been told quite a number of such cases, and some of them looked rather impressive, we also decided to include them. So maybe if we had included that cases of strong sense of presence, these figures would have looked a bit differently. Mm. But we decided only to include cases where there is a sense perception of a deceased. Because that was the way that the British researcher did their study over a century ago.
When we talk about these visual experiences, is people seeing apparitions, I see from your research that about half of these apparitions were seen in the light. So I guess it's a misconception that a lot of people have that these things happen only in the dark.
Yes, that is certainly a misperception, because according to our interviews and our data, about half of them occur in full daylight or electric light. And also worth mentioning is the fact that in about half of the cases, the person who has the experience is doing something, is working, is being busy with something. So it is not... not in a kind of some kind of a dreamy state or in the dark or darkness or semi-darkness. It is most commonly in full or nearly full lighting condition, and when the person is doing something.
Now, a lot of the your studies took place, in Iceland. So, Iceland as a country. How would Iceland rank in terms of the number of the percentage of people that believe in an afterlife? Would you say they're more receptive? Or
well, I think Iceland ranks rather high on that compared to other European nations, but it has about the same percentage as here in the United States.
Okay.
In both countries, there's a high belief in life after death. But then there was also done a very interesting study, a survey, that originated with Andrew Greeley, the well-known American writer and also social researcher.
Yeah.
And he did a study, or rather he placed some questions into a major study that was on the ultimate values of the American population. And he asked three questions that are relevant for us. Namely, people had some perception of someone who was far away, and if they had felt some telepathic contact with someone. And thirdly, that's important for us, if they had ever felt the presence or felt contact with someone who had died. And when he conducted this survey for the first time in the United States, the percentage was 31%, namely, nearly every third person had at one time or another had the experience of someone who had died. And then this question was incorporated into a major survey that was conducted in the early 80s in most countries of Western Europe. There, the figure was a little lower. It was on the average 25%. But with a great variability, the Icelanders and the Italians were highest with over 30%, but the Danes and the Norwegians were the lowest with 9 or 10%. Hmm. But also the major nations like the Germans and the British, they were, I think, 26, 27, or 8%. So this is a universal experience, and you find it really in all the countries, the Western countries, where we try to assess it.
Yeah, I guess the experiences are the same. You know, the interpretations may be a little bit different, you know, when we talk about the different various cultures and religions and so forth. But it's clear that the experiences themselves happen no matter what where you are geographically. When people see the deceased, somebody that has passed, do they appear as they were when at the age that they passed, or do they appear in various different ages?
Well, we do not always get an exact description of what they looked like, but looking at the accounts we got from people, they seem to look like. From the time they knew them, or when they knew them recently, I don't think they would see them in a different age than the one they were in around the time they died, or when the person knew them.
Hmm. Are people more likely to see a deceased loved one right after that loved one passes?
Yes, they're much more likely. About 7% of all the cases occurred like at the time when someone died, or let us say like within an hour of when the person died, and every seventh case occurs on the same day or night that the person died. And that is something that was not only found in my survey of over 400 cases, but it was also found in that old British study, now over 120 years old, of what was called the phantasms of the living, they also found that about every seventh case or concerned an experience an incident that occurred on the day or night when a particular person died. And in many or perhaps most instances, people were not aware of it, that this person was about to die or was dying.
And those, to me, are the most significant. I know that in your research, when you researched the experiences of people where the deceased was perceived within 24 hours after they died, you found that 86% of the time, the experiencer didn't know that the person had died.
That was how it was. Generally, the people didn't know about it, that the person was dying or about to die. And that is very, that's a very interesting observation.
I guess this is the same thing as these crisis apparitions that we read about.
Yes. Well, that is really, this we would call crisis apparitions. The British, they called these apparitions crisis apparitions because these were apparitions of people when they were in deep crisis, namely they were dying.
Now, but your study did show that people still have encounters with discarnate entities up to 30 years after they died, right?
Yes. As I told you, about every seventh case occurred at the time when someone was dying. About half of the cases occurred within 1 year from the time of the death of the person that was experienced. But then there were some older cases, and some of them were, in fact, very old. We had some cases of old people who had had some experience of some deceased person at the time when they were children. So these cases were then naturally very old.
Yeah. I'll tell you something else that surprised me. I mean, we often think that the vast majority of these encounters involved deceased loved ones, you know, close family members. Yet your research found that 26% of the time it involved strangers, and I was quite surprised to learn of that. So,
yes. About half of all the cases concerned relatives or people close to you, but a surprising 20% concerned strangers or near strangers, that is, people had perception of someone they didn't know. They might have heard about him or her, but they didn't know that person. And yes, that is a very high figure. But if you look at it carefully, also in that old study of the British that was done over 100 years ago, they had the similar finding, namely, there was a fairly large number, I think it was about the same percentage, of persons who were strangers. And not only that's also what we found, that the majority of these strangers, they had died violently, namely, they had died by accident or even been murdered or committed suicide. So those persons who suffered a violent death, they were in fact much more likely to appear to someone than those who had died in a natural way.
And how do you interpret that? I mean, do emotions or the do they have a stronger need to communicate? Do you have any theories on that?
Well, as you sort of suggest yourself, of course, I do not know the real reason for it, but I would think, like you are mentioning, that maybe they have a greater need to communicate. They are, if they die through violent means, they are like thrown out of life. They do not, that is something that happens to them, and there's not a natural way of death.
Mm.
And in most instances, the great these are primarily instances of accidents. And of course, accidents, they occur suddenly and unexpectedly, and people are just taken out of their normal life forcefully. And so maybe for that reason, they feel a greater need or motivation to communicate in some way.
Yeah. Getting back to the number of these encounters that involve strangers, one of the reasons that is confusing to some is that they believe that this type of communication is made possible by a bond, and a lot of people interpret that bond to be the bond of love, you know, that somehow this bond of love serves as conduit, you know, but here we have all of these cases that happen with strangers. Now, it's possible, I guess, that there are other bonds, even though they may appear to be strangers that we're not aware of, but it would tend to discount the theory that this bond of love or emotion, facilitates the process.
Well, I think the bond of emotion certainly facilitates the process, because about half of all these cases involve relatives. So that is the bond is a major reason for these apparitions. Mm. And then, of course, there are some with, like, acquaintances or colleagues and things. And there, of course, is also some bond, though it's not as strong as with relatives. But, yes, then there are these cases of strangers. And there it seems that, or it seems not unreasonable to think that the motivation for the experience comes primarily for the person who died, and in most instances, violently. So they may feel an urge to communicate.
Yeah.
Perhaps particularly with those that may be open to such a communication.
That certainly makes a lot of sense. I mean, is there any difference? It may seem like a silly question, but the deceased men or women, does one or the other communicate more from the other side?
Yes, we found out, and that was a real surprise to me, that about two-thirds of all cases of apparitions, they concern men, they concern males. So there's a preponderance of apparitions of men in our sample. And that is not only in our sample, that was also found in analysis that Stevenson did of the cases in this century-old Phantasms of the Living. And that came as a real surprise to me. But then we looked at it more carefully, and we would split people down according to their mode of death. And if we looked at those who died by disease, that naturally, then there was a little difference between the apparitions of men and women. There were some more men, but not very much so. Mm. But if you look at the number of men and women among those who died violently, then we see that the experiences are concerned primarily men who died violently. And if we look at the statistics for violent deaths, we find that many more men almost die violently than women. That has been the rule for a long time.
Yeah.
And so it was in our sample.
That's understandable. I would imagine across all cultures, men die more violently.
Yes, they die through their work, and they are more more around, and well, there are different reasons for why they die more often violently than women.
Right. Well, we're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we're going to learn quite a bit more from our guest, Dr. Erlinda Haraldson. So stay with us. When we come back, we'll hear more about the unseen world. Stay with us.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Just tuning in, our guest tonight is Dr. Erlinda Haraldson. This show is sponsored by the Equine Muscle Massage Therapy by Jan Barson, and she could be reached by phone at 631-862-1402. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Here at Forever Family Foundation, we're sending out a big thank you to our supportive listeners who have made possible this past year of bringing Signs of Life Radio to you. They know that even though we are a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, it still takes a lot of money to do the work we do. And yet, we know that not everyone has extra income they can send along to support the continuation of our programming. So this is how easy it is to keep this radio show alive without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that is taken out, and each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. Then, if your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, but first use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find what you're looking for in their more than 900 online stores like The Gap, J. Jill, Lego, Nike, Nordstrom, Old Navy, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please, take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Dessert and Discarnates, an event with certified medium Rebecca Ann Lo Cicero, is an exclusive evening for only 12 attendees and one medium, and lots of gourmet desserts, coffees, and teas. This fundraiser that was set in Oceanside, New York for tomorrow, August 10th, is sold out. We thank Rebecca Ann, and if you are interested in the next Dessert and Discarnates, it is set for January 2013. You can send us an email at events@foreverfamilyfoundation.org. How to Listen When Your Children Speak, an afternoon workshop for parents who have lost children, is from 2 to 6 p.m. in Bethel, Connecticut, with certified medium Angelina Diana, opening to bring through only 10 children in spirit. The afternoon will include evidence of an afterlife from a parent's perspective and a refreshment break with conversations from other parents who have walked in those same shoes. There are only 3 spots left at this event. Our annual November conference is set for Phoenix, Arizona, at the beautiful Hilton Phoenix Airport Hotel, with free shuttle service to and from the airport as well as to local attractions. And this conference will be the first of its kind as an intensive interactive weekend. Make your arrangements and reservations now as the hotel block is filling up. The weekend will begin with our annual Friday night fundraiser on November 9th featuring Long Island medium Teresa Caputo, and will continue through November 10th and 11th with a select group of esteemed scientists answering your deepest questions about the reality of the spirit world. The weekend also features certified mediums Dave Campbell and Deborah Morton, who will be joining our panel of expert presenters, Dr. Evan Alexander III, Lloyd Auerbach, Dr. Julie Beischel, Dr. Stafford Betty, and Dr. Claude Swanson. And 12-12-12, don't miss being in the right place on the most spiritual date of the year. 12-12-12 is a medium marathon featuring an evening of 4 extraordinary mediums, Bobby Allison, Kim Russo, Sari Bernstein, and Laura Lynn Jackson at LIUCW Post University in Brookville, New York. Seats may be reserved via the website at foreverfamilyfoundation.org on the events page. And back to you, Bob.
And we're back with our distinguished guest tonight, Dr. Erlinder Haraldson. His latest book is called The Departed Among the Living, an investigative study of afterlife encounters. And by the way, you can find the link, Amazon link to this book, as well as Dr. Haraldson's other books on our website. If you visit foreverfamilyfoundation.org, all the information is there, as well as a link to Dr. Haraldson's own website. Dr. Haraldson, I know that you've done quite an extensive amount of work in researching deathbed visions, and I guess it's more of a theoretical question, but do you think or suspect that we're all greeted by people in spirit as our time comes to cross, so to speak, to the other side?
Well, from our study of deathbed visions, I think it seems reasonable to infer that at least many of us are greeted, perhaps all of us are greeted by some loved ones or some sort of lightful beings. That seems to be the case. Yes, that was what was revealed in our study of several hundred cases of deathbed visions, or namely visions of people just before they died, in a study that Kalisosis and I did in the 70s, both in the United States and in India. And, of course, we wrote about that study, the book, At the Hour of Death.
Mm. And of course, a lot of people, you know, it could be that everybody has a deathbed vision, but some people are not physically able to communicate that, so we don't know. So no. We really don't know what the percentage.
Well, I think we do not really know what how high or low is the percentage of people who have deathbed visions.
Yeah.
I do not think it is overly high. Unfortunately, we have no way to assess, but I think they are not particularly common, but when I've been talking about deathbed visions and giving lectures of it, very frequently after such lectures, people come up to me and tell me about observations they have heard about in their family or that they have had themselves, about some relative who had died and who had visions of some loved ones just before they died.
Yeah, and of course, I guess people don't often discuss it, you know, and of course when they see an esteemed scientist talking about it, I guess you open up the the channel for discussion, so all these stories come out. We hear many anecdotal reports of about people showing up at their own funerals, and you did touch upon that in the book. Is that something you found?
Yeah. We collected or we obtained over about 450 cases. Namely, we had interviewed with about 450 people who claimed to have had an experience of someone who had died. And there were a few instances where these experiences occurred at funerals, but very, very few. And by the way, maybe we should mention that we gathered these about 450 cases, but it is not only that we listened to or recorded what people told us about their experiences. We also went through a long questionnaire on these experiences, and then we almost asked them if they knew or suspected a name for the apparition that they had seen, and also if they knew about the mode of death of that person. And we had the privilege. We had access to the Icelandic census data from the present time and quite a long time back. So we could check on every person whose name we were given if that person had in fact existed, if it had died at the age that we were told. And we could also check through existing records of causes of death in Iceland if that person had died through disease or violently. We were given access to this records, medical records. So we checked our data quite carefully as far as we could.
Yeah,
I think is the strength of our collection, that we were very circumspect to try to investigate every case or try to have it checked as far as we could. Of course, in most instances, we cannot check on what people saw, but we can check on a few aspects of it, whether they reported properly to us. Like the age of the person, and that this person had in fact existed, and that it had died in the way that we were told.
Mm. Well, from a research perspective, that was wonderful that you had access to be able to corroborate all these stories. That makes the study that much more significant. Your research found that widows and widowers were more likely to have encountered deceased than
anyone. Yes, that really is an old finding. Well, not so old, perhaps, but already, I think, in the late 50s or 60s, there was one physician in England. He made a study in a certain district in Wales and found out that about half of all physicians or of all widows have had an experience of their spouse.
Mm. Now, out of all those that had
And this, by the way, was verified in a study that Andrew Greeley did in this country, and I found something similar in Iceland, that about half of all widows and widowers, they have had an experience that they believe stems from their deceased spouse.
Mm. Now, would you say that the majority of them, when they had these experiences, were convinced that they were really being visited by their spouse?
It seems so from the data we have, both from the data of that the British physician, his name was Rees. He states in his paper on his study that these were people who were convinced that they had had an encounter with their spouse, and it seemed to occur to widows and widowers about the same extent whether they were living in a family or if they were living alone.
Mm.
So it didn't seem to be just occurring because they were alone.
Right. The in Departed Among the Living, not only do you give all the data, but the book is filled with these short narratives given by the experiencers themselves. One of the most interesting things is that there are some instances where the deceased communicated with somebody in the physical and gave them some sort of a warning, telepathically, that their loved one was able to act upon.
Yes, we obtained our cases first from our this national sample survey with that. But then we got it through some magazines, and two of them were magazines of fishermen and sailors, and they told us about the several instances where they felt and believed that they had been saved by some warning by someone who had died before them. For example, I remember one instance. It was a man. He went out just rowing, fishing alone on a boat, and then he suddenly hears a voice that tells him, or orders him to go immediately ashore. So he left his fishing line and went ashore, and just as he was coming up to the harbor, the case sweeps over a great wind, and he felt that if he had been out at open sea, he would might well have drowned.
Mm.
And there are also other instances of that, several instances, in fact, that it seems that the disease sometimes interfere and give some warning or advice that is very beneficial to the person who has the experience and saves him or her.
Mm. It's fascinating, and unfortunately, we're running out of time. I would like to remind our listeners, pick up the book, The Departed Among the Living, An Investigative Study of Afterlife Encounters. You can find a link to that on our website. I encourage our listeners to learn more about Dr. Haraldson. I know that the entire scientific community owes him a great debt of gratitude for the decades of wonderful research, and we appreciate your being with us very, very much.
Well, thank you very much, and it was a great pleasure for me to be with you.
Thank you, and safe travels, and we look forward to your continued work.
Well, thank you.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.
Bye-bye.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Stanley Mulan, Julie B., Chase McKenna, Elizabeth McKenna, Glenna Irwin, Barbara Petillo, Pat Longo, Vincent Longo, David Haith, Rita Springer, CJ, Eileen Lafada, Mark Varon, Wendy Lippo, Vicky Steffi, Nancy Scheel, Isabel Ginsberg, Barbara Russell, and Diane Archangel. Now let's give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures by praying like this. To the waters, whales, dolphins, pelicans, fishes, shellfishes, plankton, coral, algae, and all creatures in our Earth's waters, I apologize. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. That was taken from the original Gulf Water Prayer by Masaru Emoto back on May 9th, 2010.
And remember that our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.